What's going on here? Jonah swallowed by a fish. One of the questions we want to address straight away up front is, did this really happen? Okay? Because this is a common objection. This didn't happen. There's no way that a man would survive inside a fish. And we need to say up front that we believe in a God who does miracles. We believe that Jesus was born of a virgin. We believe that Jesus rose from the dead. We believe that God does all kinds of miracles. And so one of the presuppositions that we come to a passage like this with is that God is the God of the miraculous. God is powerful, and that this kind of thing, as incredible and unbelievable as it may seem, did happen, and God was working in this situation. And the point is, I think, that as we read this story, the fish, even though the fish is almost always the center of the kids' Bible story, the fish gets, well, you know, maybe a verse and a half. This is the superstar fish. He gets a couple of verses because God is concerned with something very different here. He's not concerned really with the fish. The fish is as a tool in God's hands, but he wants to do something in Jonah. So even as Jonah goes into the fish, God is trying to do something in him. You see, Jonah has been sent on a mission, a grace mission. It might sound like judgment, but he says, preach against Nineveh in chapter 1. But this is a mission where, and Jonah's very aware of this, in the end, Nineveh might experience grace and mercy if they repent. And we'll see more of that in the coming weeks. And so Jonah, having been sent on this mission, he runs away. And God sends the storm, which we looked at a few weeks ago. And then we have the fish swallow him up. And all of this story is God teaching Jonah something. If Jonah is to be on this mission, he needs to understand grace. And the storm and the fish and everything that's happened to this point, these are going to be the ways that he's going to learn about God's mercy and his grace. And so in the passage tonight we're going to look at, chapter 2, we're going to see that God has rescued this rebellious prophet of his by sending a fish to swallow him up. And what we have recorded here in chapter 2 are Jonah's words as he reflects on his deliverance from inside the fish. So we're going to work through, it's a prayer that he prays to God from inside the fish. And we're going to see what God is teaching us, teaching Jonah, but also us about his grace through this prayer. Three things that we're going to learn tonight. And the first is Jonah's distress. We'll see this in verse 2 and following. Let's read from verse 2. In my distress, I called to the Lord and he answered me. From deep in the realm of the dead, I called for help and you listened to my cry. You hurled me into the depths, into the very heart of the seas, and the currents swirled about me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. I said, I have been banished from your sight, yet I will look again toward your holy temple. The engulfing waters threatened me. The deep surrounded me. The seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down. The earth beneath barred me in forever. Jonah begins by telling of his distress, the kind of desperation of his situation. Having been thrown overboard, you remember, by the sailors, and the sea kind of grows calm for them. Now he speaks of his distress. Let's have a look at a few of the phrases that he uses. It's very full language. There's a lot going on in these words here as he describes his distress and his desperation. The first thing is in verse 2, where he speaks about being deep in the realm of the dead. The Hebrew word is Sheol. It's the place of the dead, a place where the wicked go. When he speaks about being deep in the realm of the dead, you know how we have that phrase, 6 feet under? He's 6 feet under to speak of someone who has been buried. Well, sometimes we might use that to kind of describe someone who's very, very sick. You know, they're as good as 6 feet under if they're soon to pass away. Well, this is the same kind of phrase here, that he's saying, I'm as good as dead. From deep in the realm of the dead, I called for help. In verse 3, he speaks of how God hurled him. We spoke a few weeks ago about this word, hurled. And so the sailors are the ones who hurled him into the sea. But here, Jonah says, it is God who threw him into the sea. God did this. He recognizes that this is judgment. It's deserved. And those words in verse 3, the sea and the currents, the depths, all of those words are words that have associations with the underworld, the realm of the dead. This is a desperate and distressing situation. In verse 4, he says, I have been banished from your sight, separated from God. This is just like Adam and Eve, just like when Adam and Eve were sent away from the presence of God. Here, Jonah is reflecting on being separated from God. He's already run away from God, and so in a sense, he's just getting what he deserved. And then he says at the end of verse 4, yet I will look again toward your holy temple. There's a bit of there's a question here around how you're supposed to read this. The NIV says it's part of his own prayer, a prayer that he prays as he's in the water, a prayer, I have been banished from your sight, yet I will look again toward your holy temple. If you understand it like that, it's an expression of faith. It's saying, you know what, I will come through this. I will end up on the other side of this. There is a reason, I think, to suggest that maybe it's him just stepping back for a second. So it's not part of his original prayer in the water, but it's him stepping back and saying, I have been banished from your sight. And then he steps back and says, but you know what? After everything else that's happened, I'm now here in the fish. I will look again toward the holy temples. Maybe he's reflecting more at that stage. But in any case, he's been banished. And as he's swimming there in the water, before the fish comes and gets him, this is a terrible situation to be in. And then verses 5 and 6 describe this kind of watery prison. All of the words here are words of entrapment or attack. The engulfing waters threatened me. A different translation would say something like water was attacking my throat or something like that. It was filling his mouth. It's almost like he was choking in the water. It speaks of him being surrounded. The seaweed is wrapped around his head. It becomes like ropes. He's being trapped. And then he speaks of going down to the roots of the mountains. I sank down, the earth beneath barred me in forever. The prison, the kind of the walls are closing in, the door is being shut, I'm being imprisoned in the realm of the dead. And so this is a pretty distressing situation, isn't it? And here we have this we're at the lowest of lows for Jonah. It's been down, we've said this before, down, down, down for Jonah. He went down into the ship and then he was thrown down into the sea and several other times, speaking of him going down. The point that's being made is this is so desperate. This is such a distressing situation. Here he is completely helpless. He is trapped. He is as good as dead. And as we hear him telling this and describing his distress, we wonder, well, what will happen to Jonah? You know, we know that he's safe now, but as he's telling this story, you're kind of left on edge going, man, this would be a pretty bad situation to be in. Is this it for Jonah? And then we see Jonah's deliverance, the second half of verse 6. Everything changes here. But you, Lord, my God, brought my life up from the pit. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Here Jonah describes rescue, God's rescue of him. He reflects on the provision of this fish. He says, you have brought my life up from the pit. And so, as I've said, we've gone down and down and down. But now it is up. You have brought my life up. This is a dramatic reversal of fortunes for Jonah. He says that it is God who has done this. You have done this. You are the one who's brought my life up from the pit. This is all of God. Jonah is helpless and God saves him. The pit is the grave, the realm of the dead. And he was as good as dead, but now he is alive. My life was ebbing away, which is, I think, a way of saying that he was about to faint. He was going to lose consciousness. So he's describing really physical things, that the water was so filling his lungs, the waves were so crashing over him, that the oxygen in his blood was running out and he was becoming faint. My life was ebbing away. I imagine Jonah's body sinking. There's no more thrashing. He's kind of given up. He's not trying to kind of stay afloat and kick and swim anymore. My life was ebbing away. And then he says, I remembered the Lord. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, remembered the Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. As Jonah sinks towards the dwelling place of the dead, his prayer rises to the life-giving God. His thoughts turn to the temple, that place where atonement is made for the sins of God's people, the place of grace and forgiveness. This is the dwelling place of God among his people. And so as Jonah tells this story, it sounds as though in his last breath, he finally turns his heart to God and looks to him as the only one who can save him. And God does. Back in the beginning of verse 2, in my distress, I called to the Lord and he answered me. From deep in the realm of the dead, I called for help and you listened to my cry. And so Jonah has run away from God, and the descent, which began all the way back then, takes him to the doorstep of death, to the realm of the dead. And then when he's as deep as he can go, God steps in and rescues Jonah. And the ascent begins. And we'll see as it goes on, at least next week, we see Jonah get up and go as God calls him. But here inside the fish, as Jonah now reflects on his deliverance, he gives thanks to God for the new life that is his. As good as dead, but now he's alive. And as we read the story and hear Jonah's prayer, we kind of wonder to ourselves, well, has Jonah changed? Is this going to make a big difference in Jonah's life? And so we see, thirdly, Jonah's dedication. Having rehearsed his distress and he's recognized God as the one who has delivered him, Jonah makes his confession, a declaration of intent. Verse 8, those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love for them. But I, with shouts of grateful praise, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. I will say, salvation comes from the Lord. And the Lord commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto dry land. What's going on here? These are tricky verses, but essentially the message of verses 8 and 9 is found in the contrast that's being presented between verse 8 and verse 9. And it's a contrast of loyalty, a contrast of dedication. On the one hand, in verse 8, there are those who cling to worthless idols. Those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love for them. There's several ways we can understand this verse. There's only five words in the Hebrew in that whole verse, but there's a number of ways to translate them. But the main message seems to be that loyalty to idols is worthless, that they are empty nothings, someone writes. That trust in these will prove futile. And so maybe Jonah's even reflecting on the sailors. Remember back in chapter 1, the sailors, when this storm is going off and they're praying to everything that they've got, they're finding any idol that they can find, they're praying to all of these idols. And in that case, the idols prove that they have no power. Perhaps Jonah's reflecting on the fact that idols always have no power. It's also true that loyalty to idols means that you cannot have loyalty or dedication to God. That if you don't have loyalty to the Lord, you forfeit his love and his mercy, which is what the NIV have kind of gone with. And so on the one hand, you have those who cling to worthless idols. On the